This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2014, held at Faith Builders, August 5 through 8.
Pastor, parent, teacher, dealing with multiple roles in the classroom. We probably come to this class from different perspectives. And this class is intended to have open discussion on finding our way on some things. Just because the three, pastor, parent, teacher, are in the title doesn't mean that it's only focused on that. We'd like to think about a number of different ways this applies. One of the things that we could look at, we could just broaden this out a little bit. We could think about Sunday school superintendents, outreach committee, youth leaders, chorus directors. You could think about people serving multiple roles. It's interesting how that somebody who teaches school does it for a couple years, probably knows something about, say, leading singing, and the church thinks about a chorus director and they think about the high school teacher. And sure enough, then after a while, welcome. After a while, here's a handout for you. After a while, this high school teacher finds themselves being the chorus director. And, well, this teacher maybe is gifted with speaking. And so when it comes to business meeting, there might be some offices that people vote because he would do good at that. And after a while, you have your plate full of a number of things. There's also the aspect of parents. Being a parent and teaching, how does that work? How can you do that? What would be some tips? I think, some tips, some challenges. What should you think about if you are a parent teacher? And so we'd like to touch on a number of those different roles. And maybe you're here saying, well, I am not a pastor and don't want anybody to think that I'm here because I think someday I should be a pastor. You're fine in this class. Attending this class is not about aspiring to a new role. Attending this class is to try to help us to think about how to be effective with multiple roles and serving at various levels. I think that people who are willing to serve other people who are willing to get involved serving, often end up with multiple roles. It's just the way it works. And I know some of you here, and I know there's some variety in our experience where we're at. But let's just think, first of all, about some positive results for serving. This is some of the blessings. When we choose to get involved with serving, there's some good things it can accomplish. There's some blessings that we can be a part of. Number one, we can learn to know the children growing up in our churches. So we learn to know the families and the children. I remember when I started teaching, Ivan Martin Jr. was the principal, and he told me that teachers live in glass houses, meaning that families will see right through you and you can't hide. And I didn't like that. I really chafed at that thought. I thought, that's unfair. That's unfair. Why must I live in a glass house? Well, I didn't go very far into teaching until I realized the truth that families live in glass houses too. And you can see right into homes. There's been times with parents that back and forth on some conversations, I would tell parents that I won't believe everything that their student says about home if they don't believe everything that their student says to them about school. Kind of goes both ways. There's a certain amount of maturity needed to live in glass houses and respect other glass houses. That's part of what this class is about. So we learn to know the children growing up in our churches. We can, number two, we can gain experience in working with people and dealing with issues. So experience with working with people and dealing with issues. To take on a job as teaching is to commit yourself to a people problem job. And there's some special challenges that go with that. There's some special blessings that go with that. My third daughter is just preparing to enter the classroom this year for the first. She's taking up the place of my second daughter, who's getting married in October. So my oldest daughter had taught a number of years, and then my second daughter taught. Now my third daughter is going into the classroom. But back a couple of years, as this third daughter was out of school and had a job, she's made this comment that I hope that people don't think that all of Luke's children have to teach school, because she thought she would be something other than a teacher. And that was fine. I was okay with that. It didn't bother me. I thought that possibly that would change, but I wouldn't be the one who would actively try to change it. So she got a job at Shady Lane Eggs, and she was grading eggs every day of the week, packing eggs and working with the yuck of the eggs. And before she worked there, she enjoyed eggs for breakfast, but after she worked there, you couldn't give her eggs for breakfast. She did that for about a year and a half, and then one day she said to my wife, she said, "You know, it's really not a future in packing eggs. It pays good, but the money is about all that is there in the egg industry." There's a little glimmer of hope that maybe some things are shifting. It's interesting how children can go through that sometimes. So then eventually the school need came up, and what should a dad do? I did not suggest her name. Try to stay out of the middle of it. I left the school board figure out that she is just grading eggs. And then they came one day looking for, well, the school board chairman wondered her cell phone number from me, and I gladly gave it to him. I knew probably what was part of that. So experience in working with people and dealing with issues, it's different than just packing eggs. Although there's people issues with packing eggs. There's other girls that work there, and that's probably a good place to start learning to give and take and getting ready for the greater challenges in a classroom. Number three, teaching experience makes a good speaker or a good leader. It does affect that. And there's some practice. There's things like that that teaching does help. Number four, we can shape families and youth for God's kingdom. And I know of no greater thing to be involved in than to be involved in helping people to be more like what God wants them to be. And teaching puts you in the middle of that to help children and families. Many times, though, we say in administration that families will always win. Like, it is very difficult for teachers, it's very difficult for school to change much in family life. It's very difficult. If dad doesn't think it's necessary to go beyond eighth grade, his children probably won't go beyond eighth grade. And probably as school personnel, we are at the wrong place to change that. Because this is kind of the way this works with people, is we are on one side of the battle line, they're on the other side of the battle line. Actually, some of those things get changed best by a fellow soldier on dad's side of this battle that says, "You know what? But this was a blessing to my children." And he looks around and says, "Oh, you are with me. You are like me. And you think that? Maybe I ought to think that as well." If it comes across from our side, well, of course you think you ought to have more than eighth grade because you're a teacher. But it is true, though, that we can shape families and youth for God's kingdom. I met someone here at this youth at this institute, this teacher's institute, who is an aunt or is a relative of a student I had a number of years ago. And this lady does not know me very well at all, but she knows I had her relative in the classroom. And this lady was in one of my classes, and she heard me speak, and she said, "Oh, I can't believe it. That relative boy of mine that you had as a student sounds like you when he talks." Now, that might scare Denley, because I had him for a student too, so I don't know whether he talks like I talk or not. We do shape. There is influences. And number five, we can experience the blessing of God for service in His kingdom. Just the happiness of knowing that there's something that we can do for God and serve Him in His kingdom. Now, I'd like to open it up. Maybe you think of some other positive things for involvement with people, serving and giving as parents, as teachers, as pastors, as wherever we find ourselves. Maybe there's additional positive things that you think about that. And we start with the positive because there's sometimes we get into some of the difficulties of administration. We need to go back and think about some of the positives to keep us going through some of the negative days. Do you have anything to add to this section number one, positive results for serving, some things that are a blessing? Okay, we won't tarry long. Let's go on. Second section is general issues we can face. I've divided this up in, first of all, general issues we can face as teachers, parents, personnel working, and then challenges that parent teachers face as a parent being a teacher, and then as challenges that pastor teachers face. So try to move through it in that order. Number one, one of the issues that I think we face is that people sometimes feel intimidated by teachers / preachers. I was kind of shocked how intimidated I felt yesterday before getting up to have a class. I felt more nervous than I have in a long time. And I was trying to figure out what it is. And I think it's in this point. Somehow I got just a little scared about teachers. This place is full of teachers that have taught many years, and there's lots of wisdom, and there's something intimidating about a teacher. They look up to teachers as having all knowledge, and we don't have all knowledge. We have lots of knowledge, but not all knowledge. They assume we have all the answers. They assume that we see through their ideas. I've met this a time or two in discussions, say like a Sunday afternoon visiting, where a father would be a little careful about sharing something, or he would say something and he would kind of backpedal, looking to me to either say amen or to finish it, like somehow I know that. And it was a subject that really I couldn't argue with what he said. I really wasn't. It was fine. I thought everything he said was good and helpful and right, and I had nothing. But this whole thing of feeling just like I wish you just looked at me as just another brother in the room, not, you know, like, well, we got to ask Luke about this. But I think that that's one of the things that people sometimes feel intimidated. And there's another side of this that we should think about. And that is that if suppose there's a struggle, there's a problem, you need to talk to a dad. It's possible that we as administrators, as teachers, are talking to this dad thinking that we're on level ground and this is a one-on-one conversation. But from the dad's perspective, he feels intimidated. He's down here and you're up here. Automatically, that's how he looks at it. Everything that we say, okay, if we have a challenge for him or something that we need to tell him ought to be different in his family, it smacks harder because he feels intimidated and he feels I'm up here. And sometimes there's maybe misunderstanding, or sometimes maybe we come across too strong, or we don't quite connect, partly because I as a teacher think, well, we're on level ground, we're equal brothers, and we really are. But their perspective is maybe too much the other way, that sets a stage in their minds that these things maybe it shapes the way they receive it. And you think through that when we talk to parents and try to have a sense, a feel for where are they in this and help them not to be intimidated. Now, that's the part with blanks. What can I do about this? This idea of people feeling intimidated by teachers, preachers, and what can you do? What can we do to diffuse that? What can we do to be brothers on the same level? So when you walk into the room, it's not like, oh, okay, well, you know. So what do you say about this? This, surely you've got this all wrapped up in a neat package for us, and we don't. We're just, you know, we're just lay brothers. You're the teacher, preacher. I have some things written down, but possibly you have some thoughts.
Maybe just make an effort to show hospitality to them, have them in your home for Sunday dinner, whatever.
Okay, an effort to show hospitality, have them in your home, reach out to them.
Just in my personal devotion yesterday morning, I read a verse that hit me in a way that I never did before, 1 Peter 5, and be clothed with humility.
Okay, clothed with humility.
Clothing, what is clothing for?
Sure. You know, it's just not...
We dress, sometimes you see people dress very gaudy, they're trying to draw attention to themselves, but when you clothe with humility, is you're trying to, like, camouflage.
So you're...
Blend
you're
out of the scene.
Blend out of the scene instead of sticking out that, oh, I know the answer to that. Oh, yeah, in history, we study that, whatever.
I know what you're talking about. The same thing bothers me, too. Oh. Discussion. Oh, we have a teacher in the room. They look at you.
Oh.
Why not God? Come on.
There's some other good ideas in this room, I think, of how to do this.
One of the things we've used as teachers is working in the center of discussion and putting the final word on it. And I think sometimes we have to be able to choose to back off and make somebody else finish off something like that. At the same time, there are things that we know because of our work that some of the others don't, and I think we also need to make sure we don't deliberately just check out of discussion. Because sometimes we do have information that's pertinent. There's a fine balance in that.
Yes.
And I find myself, unless I make a conscious effort to give room to the other people, I'm used to that role, and you just slip into it without thinking unless you deliberately choose to say, you know, hey, I'm gonna try to work and make us a group of equals, mm-hmm. instead of, you know, hey, well, yeah, here's what this is, and then move on to the next issue. And we need to do that in the classroom, but transition to relating as peers instead of a teacher-student role.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we do that.
That's an important point. So could we say, as you think about this, not moderating the discussion and putting the last word on when we're with brethren or sisters of equal value when we're talking about it. You talked about sometimes we do know things. Maybe we could say that, so here we have, maybe we know something, say, from Mennonite history, and we're on this discussion. Maybe we could share the historical thing that applies to this or something that we know. But still, it's the commitment then to the group, well, here's something that happened in the past, so how should that shape our thinking today? And then we back out of making the conclusion, what should we think about that event? We might know the event, be able to share it. That's good facts for them to be thinking about when we make this decision, but there's a difference between helping with the discussion and dominating it and bringing it to a conclusion. And there's some other ideas, maybe.
Sometimes we can get a feeling of the gravity of our position and the influence that we inevitably have on that position as a teacher or whatever role we're feeling. And it can cause us to try to shield ourselves from appearing to be inferior in places that we are. And perhaps that's part of what was touched on with the idea of humility. But to be frank about the things that you don't know and the roles that you can't fill and the mistakes and weaknesses that you do have, whether in the classroom or outside the classroom, allows people to see that you aren't on some special super pedestal as a peer to leader. You're a human too, and you're trying to walk with God this before.
Yeah, that's very good. I think another thing that we can do is encourage others with compliments. We hear somebody that's thinking correctly and using wise logic. That's good. That really applies to this. That they a compliment, for, okay, if they feel intimidated from us, by us, and they receive a compliment from us, that compliment is like, what, double? Because, oh, this teacher thinks I did well with sharing or leading the discussion. Any other thoughts on what to do about this? This is one of the things that, yeah, it's kind of a, this comes through in a number of different fronts where we can face this, just plain socially relating to others.
Another thing to think of is, along with being clothed with humility, Christ did know all.
Mm-hmm.
And yet when people came to him, like, take for instance, the man came and asked him, well, what must I do to inherit eternal life? And what the, Jesus knew the answer.
Mm-hmm.
He could have told him the answer. But I don't think that that's truly the role of a teacher. The role of a teacher is to help the students come to the answer themselves. And so what did Jesus do? He said, what would you read in the law? Instead of telling them what you know, ask them a question that leads them to the answer themselves.
Okay, so when you're back to this thing of discussion and talking with a group of brethren or sisters, and you ask the questions to help them to think through it and help them to come to the conclusion that maybe we knew where this conclusion is going to end, but rather than getting there ourselves, help them to get there. Okay, number two is that administrators can overcommit themselves. Too many irons in the fire, so many things filling our minds we can't think straight. Something usually suffers, and it's often the quiet, unseen things of life that suffer. Stress can bring out the worst in us. I enjoyed John Koblenz's talk the other day, and overcommitment is something when you're multitasking, when you're doing more than one thing, you can overcommit. This is, I'm not sure how ladies find this, but for men, when we are going through life and someone asks us to do one more thing, it feels like defeat for us to say, no, I don't think I can do that. It feels like a conqueror to say, yes, I'll tackle that. So we are tempted to say, sure, I can come and share. Without being realistic with our schedule and the pressures that that produces. Because we don't want to be a we want to accomplish. It's kind of born in us, some more than others. And so now we have two commitments, the first one that we were doing and the second one. And we didn't realize how much they would conflict. But we don't want to be somebody that can't handle life. And so we get into this, and the reality hits us that I can't do either of those very well. And so I'm kind of limping on the first project I was working on and limping on the second one as well. And the reality hits us that I am defeated. I didn't want to be someone who can't tackle it. And so I said yes, because I wanted to avoid defeat. And by saying yes, I walked right into worse defeat. Now I'm not able to do both of them. That's not to scare us. That's simply to say we need to try to be as realistic as possible, that we don't overcommit ourselves. So what can you do about this overcommitment thing? Do you have some ideas? You could say learn to say no.
Learn to get along with less sleep.
Learn to get along with less sleep.
Yeah. I think saying no is important, and maybe with that is ask our wives.
Okay.
If they would rather not, I mean, maybe I'll take that as a sign from the Lord. Not, I'm not saying if they said no. I'm saying if they would rather not.
If they're saying, "Oh, I don't know if you should,"
then maybe we ought to think, say the Lord's speaking through them. Because one thing I notice sometimes when people get really busy. They talk about how busy they are, and they're just so busy. Oh, it's just so much to do. And sometimes we can even complain to others about that, but really, we're usually the only ones that can do something about it. And sometimes the people that talk about it aren't really willing to do something about it.
Exactly. There's a certain...
So then what is the point? I mean, at least don't complain to others about it. If you're going to make yourself so busy, you can't do it all, then don't complain to someone else how busy you are.
Mm-hmm. Do you think there's a certain addiction that some people find in being overloaded, or maybe not an addiction, certain...
Identity.
And I'm just this overworked person. I'm able to do so much. Yeah.
I have a question after that. So when you find yourself limping on two or three or five fronts, what do you do? Do you burn the candle on both ends and make it happen? Or is there something else you should do?
Well, somebody just gave me an example of that here. We had an evangelist lined up to speak for us in October. And he has a business, a landscape business, supply business. And he had a partner or someone working for him that could pretty much run it while he was gone. And that person is quitting, moving on. And he called me and he said, look, I'm just not going to be able to do revivals for you. I'm sorry. It's getting down to the last minute, but I'm not going to be able to do that. Oh, don't do that to me. At the same time, I have a commitment that I overcommitted myself to in September. Well, the Lord changed my date book quite a bit when I was ordained bishop, and now so fall councils and communions suddenly filled up slots that I really didn't have a choice whether I do it or don't in a lot of ways. So I have this tight spot in September, really tight spot. I could probably do it with a little less sleep. But my wife said to me the other day, she said, maybe you ought to do what that brother did. He looked at his schedule and said, I just can't do this for you. I hate to do that to people because I hate when that happens to me. But.
What he said about your clothes and all that, you didn't humble enough to say, look, I can't.
Yeah. You'd be amazed how many people actually respect you for that, though. If you can't, it's because then you take it on and then you don't throw your all into it. And then there's something to grumble about.
Or you take it on and people realize that, oh, you drove through the night to get here, whatever. Oh, we could have done something different. Then you're like, well, why didn't I speak about my tight spot?
Yeah.
That's very, very good. I think we should remember that our loved ones need some quality time too. If we overcommit ourselves and serve the church and lose our family, our children, did we really do what God wanted us to do?
Just to reiterate what Matt said about the simpler lives, in reality, those of us who are married, if we overcommit, who probably is going to pay the price?
Yeah.
It's a lot of things.
So, listening to our wives.
And most times they're not going to say, no, you can't do that, because those are the kind of wives we get. But listen to where they're at and use that and realize that it's the first priority.
Yeah, that's it. That's good advice. I know there's been a time or two that I was thinking pretty negative that, no, I'm not going to do this. And my wife said, well, I think that, you know, I'd be open to you, sir. I think that you could do that. I mean, I'm willing to, you know, I think it would work in family setting. Like, okay. So overcommitting.
Is it okay to bail out of church positions in the same way?
Like asked to not be involved in the lot, because you're a school teacher.
I was going
to
bring that one up. I do have a couple of friends who, one of us has made that request, and also have another friend who is on all the committees in the church, basically, and is asking this question.
Well, committees in the church, that would be a workshop session itself from my perspective. But in our group, we don't ask men if they're willing to be on the slate to serve. And I think that's wrong. When I served with CLP, everything that I did for them, they asked whether I felt like I had the time to do it. And when push came to shove, guess who I served and cut off? I served the people who asked if I thought I had time to do it because I couldn't. hardly say no to it. Committees where you were just put on and you're on three or four committees, and in your mind you're thinking, didn't they ever look at this? Like, don't they know that there's other people that could do this? I tended to, and maybe that's a bad response from me, but I tended to say, well, they didn't ask me if I had time. I won't be able to make it tonight. I think that the role of a teacher is very important in the church, and I really think that the church should have some discussions about what it means to find teachers, and what it means to not burn them out, and what it means to give them, commission them to serve our church, a little like leaders do. But I know that's kind of new territory for a pilgrim bishop to say.
I appreciate the brother's question, because I'm struggling. I haven't given my answer yet. I was asked to teach the adult men's Sunday school class. And I'm struggling with that because I do love to teach.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a pretty sizable congregation, and there are other brothers who could do it. But how do I balance my family life, the school life, and now am I supposed to teach Sunday school or not? So give me an answer.
Well, one of the things that you can look at, one of the ways that this works, so you're facing this question, should I consent to teach adult Sunday school class? If you do, you possibly will rob another brother of the practice of learning to teach. So by saying no, you might say that, well, I'm hurting the church. I'm saying no to some service. But what you might be saying is yes to exercising another's talent who you may need to follow in your shoes someday somewhere teaching in the school. You have to think broader than Josh hasn't thought.
I hardly agree with all of this. I certainly found myself in a place where I'm way overcommitted and I had to learn how to say no. Maybe it's not even appropriate for me to bring this up, but I thought I would just put a wedge in for the other side. When I started in the teaching career, it was all new and it was a big overload. And the church was very small, and so they immediately put me on as Sunday school superintendent and various other positions, which I was not used to have ever had before. And I really felt like I was pushed to the extent there was no way I could handle it. And so I talked to the local minister there, and I said, I don't know. I don't see how I can handle all of this. And he just smiled rather politely and said, you can do it. And actually, I could. And I did learn a lot of things out of that. And that's not a lifestyle. We can overcommit to the point that we actually destroy ourselves, and God does not want that from us.
Mm-hmm.
But we can also feel ourselves that we need to balance our lives so well and our schedule so nicely that we never are pushed to a limit in which we actually have to rely on God's grace to see us through. So a lot of this is kind of decide, what is God's real desire for me here? And am I doing this because of my desire to my ego?
Mm-hmm.
Or am I doing it because of a call to serve? And that's going to be hard to discern.
Opening that up to the other side.
Now, what do you think? Is it okay to give a conditional yes?
Oh, yes.
Let's say I'll try it, but if I see it's too much,
I'm going to back out. That's very helpful.
Yeah. All right, let's go to number three. Administrators can become cynical. Cynical, expecting the worst from people, marking families as hopeless. I don't know if you face this. Is that something that, as teaching, you put people in boxes and you kind of expect? That's something I've just had to really work hard to not fall into that trap. When you work with people, and that's true even in business, there's customers that come into the store that I work at now, and there's some that have problems, or some that maybe refuse to pay a bill, or were upset, return something, or just a problem all the way around. When they walk in the store, that's sometimes the first thing you think. That's who they are when they bring their next items to the counter. So it's not just school administration, but cynical. Do you find that? Is that something that you have to work against? What do you do to work against that? What do you do to keep from becoming cynical? Just be unrealistic and just smile and expect the best out of everyone. I know it's been this way for the last 5 years, but this year it's going to be different, and we're going to have...
My biggest step forward in that was when God kindly but graphically showed me how much of a basket case I was. Because, you know, anybody should see mankind as cynically, it would be God. We're all pretty hopeless, and it takes a long time for them to get things through our heads sometimes, and we still mess up. And when I see that in my own life, it sure helps.
Helps when you look at others. So looking at ourselves and realizing our own needs maybe is a big help. I think another thing is to believe in the work that God can do in hearts. And really pray about that and commit it to God and to His Spirit to work.
I'm just recognizing that tendency. Admitting we have that tendency and deliberately choosing to try to guard against it. And with what you said, just having being honest about what people are at now and having a vision for what people can become and realize that it's their part.
Yeah, being honest about it and talking about it. One of the things that I found helpful is having someone else in administration with you that you can talk to and say, look, you tell me if I'm thinking wrong. You tell me if I'm becoming cynical. You help me. I need somebody to just, you know, that I can confide in, that if I'm too much, if I'm becoming cynical, that someone can say, you know, just... give them a little bit more space. Number four, administrators can end up with too much influence. People start looking to you for too many answers. Can end up having our way, our ideas, our wishes accomplished. And then there's a certain amount of people who will see that happening and might resent that or wish to change that. And so they begin to dig in their heels against it. And we wonder, what's this resistance? Why is there some who, you know, always vote the other way? It might be their immature attempt to harness us and back us off. It might be they're not maybe thinking through it, but somehow they just feel like, well, this is dangerous. We have one person that has too much. I don't know if that's how big an issue that is, but I do believe that the Bible approach, going two by two, is a good approach in administration, to have two people working together so that it's not just my idea. And if a parent feels like I'm not seeing it correctly, there's somebody else that they can talk to about it, saying, look, I'm a little frustrated with this. This is where Brother Luke would be, but I wonder if he's seeing it correctly. And then and me being okay with that there's another brother that you can talk to, and then we can confide in each other and talking about it, saying, look, what is true in this situation? Well, how should we? I had a bishop recently tell me that we should be careful about what things we put our weight to. There's a lot of things in church life that bishop could be silent. The carpet that you're going to put in the auditorium in the church, don't really wade into that, because trustees and other good men can figure that out. There'll be other issues that are... There'll be other issues that you feel God would have you to influence a little more. Let choose to stay out of some of the things, just to be more silent, soft on the subject. This would be my thought, but you, brethren, I trust you. You can make a good choice. Another way to do this is to vote for other people's ideas. Wouldn't be my first idea, but it's a good idea. So I'd like to support what John's suggesting. Maybe we've covered some of that, but maybe you have some thoughts on this, any of this, with these general things that we face. And we'll move to things that parents as a teacher face.
It might be good for us to think about, when we're called leadership roles, to, is there any area in my life where I'm not the leader? And if the answer is no, I'm a leader in every area, then maybe we ought to do something different. Because it is easy for us men. We're just used to going ahead. And it's good for us at least have one area, whether it's in church or in work. Which we're supposed to go ahead of our families. But if we're just always in charge, I don't think a lifetime of that is good. Mm-hmm. So, and I like the thing you said as part of the administration of the school, is there can be two people mm-hmm. that are working there. And maybe, presumably this fits under pastors, teachers, if we can be for pastor, teacher, to not be the principal, if it's an option, at all an option. Mm-hmm. And I know it feels different because I've been both. It does feel different when you're under someone else. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it feels really good, and sometimes it doesn't feel so good.
I like your honesty.
Yeah. Isn't that a choice we make, though? And you're not in a situation, but in small ways, maybe it's something as minor as at a volleyball game or something. And I'm just, to be honest, I can do a better job organizing things than this other person does. And if they'll let me take over, so I have to deliberately choose, say, no, I wasn't asked to do that. I'm under you. You do it.
Yeah.
I'm going to deliberately step back because, you know, they're wanting advice, they're wanting to know how to go about it, but they can figure that out, and I need to step back and say, no, they asked you to do this, I'm going to put myself under you, even though you probably won't do the job the way I would, but you can get it accomplished with a growing experience for you. I have to choose to be under that.
Yeah.
And I really like what you said, Matt, about taking leadership, because we can, it almost can happen by default, and all of a sudden, you realize, you know, I just kind of took over. And I wasn't really doing anything. I wasn't really asked to. But I did a good job. But that was a principle of all of it.
Yeah, that's an important point that we need to be careful that we think about. What are the areas that I'm not in charge? And show that we too submit to authority. We can be a good example of that and help others. There's this thing, like you said, about organizing a volleyball game. You know, look, you're in charge here tonight. There's just also this thing of being able to gently speak a little advice. You know, if you would just number off four teams or something or whatever. If they came saying, look, you know, I'd suggest you number off, but look, you're in charge tonight. If it's a brother trying to figure out how to do this and he gets a little helpful advice from you, but then he's going to carry it forward. There's a blessing in that you were a support to him and he learned some leadership from you, but you got to be careful because you're on the edge of taking over and then, well, here, will you number off? Look, I'll support you. I'll help you. You need a little help or advice, I'll help you, but you do it. Those things, I think that in this whole subject of multiple roles, it's something that we have to think through and watch and repeatedly think through it as we face these areas. So where am I in this and where should I be? And where does God want me to be? And where is it wise for me to be? It's not a sin for you to do that necessarily, but is it wise? I like that this morning that we try to cut things sometimes. Oh, is it sin or is it, you know, so much right and wrong? Sometimes it's a question of what's wise and what's unwise.
I have really a lot of trouble with the submitting part. Like, if I'm asked, I get asked to do lots of stuff, and then it's like, you know, the school board, hey, can you take this on yet? Well, I don't want to be, you know, where does the part come in of saying no, and where does the part come in, well, I should be submissive and do it.
Okay. If they ask you, then you should submit and say, sure, I'll serve you in that way.
You know, where
do you find that line?
Where it's, you know, wrong to do that. then someone like, oh, well, you can do it. Come on, be more submissive. And it's like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
it just, yes, I understand what you're saying. It feels like resisting your authority to say no, yeah. To add one more thing.
And just for example, what happened 2 years ago, oh, good, Kim, you came back to teach. No one wants to be head teacher. Will you do it? Well, I don't feel like I've been to school. Like, hello, I just came back to teach, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I took it on, and the first year went great. Last year we had a new school board member who had, he was on way too many committees, so he left the school fail. Mm-hmm. So I got really a lot of stuff laid on my plate.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up towards the end of the year just saying, well, you know what? I'm married to Jerry. I'm not married to Bethel School.
Yeah.
I didn't. And then I got thrown at me. Well, come on, be a little more submissive. But like,
yeah, that's how.
But isn't submission coming under authority? And if somebody is asking you to do something, they don't have the authority. It is a choice that you have to make. In other words, if they have the authority to tell you,
they will just tell you
to do this. Then you need to submit. But if somebody is asking you, would you be willing to do this? That's not a command. That's a request.
Well, like one example was, it came to our spring program. Oh, hey Kim, you know what's going on? Hey, do you mind starting the? I was asked by the school board, hey, you're good at it. You can just get up there and, you know, say a few words before. And I was like, no, I'm a class to lead. Like, I just felt like, and then someone else did get up, but I felt, then I get this guilt trip all the time on myself. Where
should you be?
Isn't that why we have a school board?
Mm-hmm.
I mean.
Yeah.
Like you said, you are married. I'm assuming you're married, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And so, yeah, say, and then some of those things, talk to him about it,
uh-huh.
And then him just going to say, look, my wife is not going to do that. She's got enough money for you. And then you're not torn between, well, who's my first wife?
Right, uh-huh. Right.
You're under your husband.
Right.
And get him to run interference for you and some of those things.
I usually, like, unload on him, and he'll be like, no, you can do it. And the next time he'll be like,
very.
Well, you're not really committed to do that. That's like
right.
Not.
It's not. That's, you don't have to do all of those things.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's. I think too. That's a good idea as far as the husband involved in helping to figure that out. But the very fact that they're asking, instead of saying do this, they're admitting they don't have the authority to say this is yours. Mm-hmm. They're asking, which they're saying they acknowledge that you have the authority to say no.
I'm good at that. I mean, I'm really a strong person, but on the other hand, I often be like, well, somebody has to do it.
Right. Very good. I enjoy that discussion. Let's move to parent-teacher. Being a parent and a teacher, how does that work? What are some of the challenges? Number one, people watch to see if we favor our children. That's probably one of the primary things. Our children must understand this. It's good for teachers who are parents to have some good chats with their own children about how this works and help their children to understand that this is a potential. This is something that you can face. And here's how it will look, and here's how we will relate to it. And try to help your own children to be okay with having a little less, or be okay to contribute to diffusing this. I fell into a trap at one point with, we had gotten some new chairs for the classroom, and usually at the beginning of the year, I just put chairs with desks wherever, and it happened that my daughter had a new chair, but some other girl in the classroom didn't have a new chair, and the other girl was in a grade ahead, and, you know, an older student should have, you know, the priority. Why wouldn't the older student have the newer chair because they've been in school longer? And some of that logic, I guess, is okay. It's what the logic a parent used, but, I quickly saw to it that we got that changed. It was a struggle on the parents' part that really they should see through that and help their child see through that. But I was at the wrong place being a parent, having a child with the new chair to say, no, you just need to get over it and your daughter needs to accept it. Actually, another school administrator, someone else on the board, had heard a little about it, and I had a chat with the parents about it. It was fine. It didn't end up being a big deal. And my child was okay with, you know, the switch, because we had this understanding that this is the kind of thing that you face. And we won't get an attitude over it. It's okay. So here's a family maybe that has a wrong attitude, you know, isn't handling this the way they should. That's all right. We'll give them a good chair. And life will go on. It's good for my children to learn that, and it will help them. But it does pose some problems. So what do you do about this? How do you combat this fear of favoring your children? Send them to a different school. I did that for a while. Not purposely.
I realize not everybody has that opportunity, but we did it just because of logistics. It makes I'm teaching at a school that is not my home church, and our children go to the school at our home church just because it's closer. So it was more logistics than anything, but I did favor that for this very reason. Not that I couldn't teach my own children, but my dad taught some of my siblings, and I know how some of that goes. And it was just a way to avoid.
Yeah. I did that too, logistically. We were closer to Marystown, and my children went there, and I went I taught at Cedar Run. Another real blessing with that is if you're a principal and you get a knock on your door and a teacher's saying, I have the student that is us and us and us, you know it's not one of your students. You're one of your children. However, logistically, when they have parent-teacher meetings, then you have to be present at both of them. But that's interesting.
Just another question on with that. Not my children are old enough to be in the classroom yet. But I think the trap that I will probably tend to fall in more is being harder on my kids and expecting more from my kids.
That's what I was thinking.
And so how do I guard against that?
That's a good question.
Fair to my children.
Your children will tell you. I had both of mine.
They will.
Yeah, well, I had both of mine in my class, and I didn't even realize I was doing it. And my daughter says to me one day, she's like, Mom, everybody got to be the office messenger. And she's like, and we're on the second round, and you still didn't pick me. And I was like, oh, yes. Like, I realized I was going the other way.
Because that's just as wrong.
It is. And then another thing, I heard my son talking with my niece, and my niece, her dad's a minister, and she was like, yeah, well, sometimes it's not fun being a PK, who the preacher's kid, and she's like, because you're always looked at, and Jesse says, yeah, well, I'm a PK too, a principal's kid, and it's just as bad. And then I realized, like, I was actually being harder.
On your own children.
Yeah. But one thing I did do, we had this contest through the whole school, and my children won. So it was the perfect. And I actually called a teacher's meeting over it because I'm just like, there is no way I'm getting up there standing and awarding my children. No. So we ended up giving out two prizes, and we couldn't agree on anything with the teacher's meeting, so I'm just like, yeah, well, you know what? It was a box of donuts from another building. So it was great to them, but I bought two boxes of donuts, and I said, well, and I explained to the school, I said, maybe someday some of you will understand. This isn't easy. I think it's great that my children won, but I just don't feel right giving it. So that kind of put everybody on a different level. I didn't know this thing.
That's an interesting challenge. Like, so you do this, and then your child won, and so here it is.
I was thinking, how can this be?
I didn't see this one coming.
Yeah. And then another thing is we give Student of the Year awards, and I refuse to give my children. I told them I will take you to the zoo, that I feel you're special with you, but I cannot pick you. Like, it just...
Mm-hmm. So you have that understanding beforehand.
Yeah, and I told them, you know, maybe years to come, you'll be in a different student class, and maybe get it or something.
Then you'll have a chance.
I'm not paying it this year.
One of those, thinking about that office messenger thing, one of the things that I found helpful is complete randomness. even seating arrangements, when teaching grades 8 through 10, I would, and Denley can tell you this, I would often take a piece of paper and number the seats. And then I would tell them to pick a number. And it's, you don't like where you're sitting? Pick a better number next time. I mean, you should know. Now, they get pretty good at trying to figure out where your hand went, like with the numbers. Like, was a high number at the bottom of the page? That's the back of the room, or at the top of the page? But complete randomness. And I was doing that a number of years, and then we went and visited a public school, and this public school teacher had a can with popsicle sticks in, and he had the students' names on it, and when it came time to ask a question in class and needed a response, he'd pull a popsicle stick to call on a person. And I asked him about it afterward, and he said, "Oh, that's easy explanation. That's liability." He said, "No one can sue me for picking on a child." He said, "I've gotten sued over calling on a child. The parent said, 'You knew my child didn't know you wanted to embarrass him in public.' Or I've gotten sued over parents who said, 'You always pick on the smart child in the class.' So I use popsicle sticks, and it's totally random. Now, I never thought about getting sued over who you ask a question in school.
I ended up doing the last thing, ABC order thing, just because I teach second, and it helps that they, after a while, they'd be like, "Oh, well, you're an Ospal, so you would be next." Or,
okay, yep.
And that just worked out a whole lot.
Yeah, randomness really takes some of that out. So what were you, why did you put my boy up front or my girls up next to your desk? Or look, it's total randomness. Randomness can get you in trouble. Two, you can have two naughty people side by side, but...
then you follow the can't won't rule.
The can't won't rule.
I tell my students, you have this privilege, but if you can't properly appropriate it, then you won't have it.
Then you won't have it. The can't rule. That's interesting.
Yeah. If you can't handle it, you won't have it.
Okay, very good. Let's go on. We're going to run out of time here. Number two, children can be too involved in what's going on at school. They can learn to be tattlers and critical of their peers, so they can be your informant, and that's a problem. Or they can be the news media for school administration. They can carry, what was decided at school board meeting back to the school. And both of those, that's two sides of the same coin. They're the teacher's child or the principal's child, and they know stuff. My children, I purposely tried school board decisions, or right now we're working on a teacher for the upper grades, and we still don't have that. I keep receiving texts and I keep making calls while I'm here at Faith Builders to coach our chairman as he frantically is working on that subject. But my children have no clue what the list looks like of who they were asking and who we're waiting on an answer for. And whenever the person is found, it's always my wish that my children find it out, like at church. "Hey, I heard so-and-so's going to teach upper grade class." And it's amazing what other children are like, "So you don't know? No, my dad didn't say it." "Really? I thought you would know. I mean, my dad..." I'd just assume that they learn elsewhere. Not always. Every so often I'm so excited about something that's decided that I just can't hardly keep it. And there it is. Boom. They know it. So we can be too involved. They should not. We should not use our children for tattlers. The way it worked really nice in our home is if, like, we had eight girls and one boy, and so mom would listen to the girls washing dishes or whatever. She'd hear about their day at school, and then sometimes she'd talk to me and say, there's maybe this going on you ought to look at or whatever. And the girls didn't really know where the connecting dot was. They were talking to mother, and then she would just refer me to look at something. And usually I would try then to see it myself. Usually hearing something from my children, I would kind of say, "Okay, now I want to watch that." And then you watch, and then you see it yourself, and then you deal with what you saw instead of coming in saying, "Now look, children are telling me that this is going on," and then they start to try to connect dots. Who told you and who was the informant? Usually it works best if it just kind of pointed you a direction to watch for things, and then you found it yourself, and then you dealt with what you saw. And that way it takes the tattler off it just gets rid of that because you're dealing with something that you saw. Number three, children can struggle accepting our leadership. If children can have you for a father and for an upper grades teacher and for a principal and a preacher, and after a while, it's good. I found this with my son. It's good for him to work for somebody else. It's just good. It's not that he is making wrong choices, I don't think. It's not that I feel like I've done a lot of things wrong. It's just good exposure for him to work for somebody else, relate to another authority. Now, maybe you have additional things on that. I will just quickly then go over a few things for pastors. How many of your pastors here? Okay, we've got two pastors here. Just quickly, number one, we can find ourselves in the middle of too much in administration. There's a problem, I think, whenever families find themselves in trouble with me at school, they're in trouble with me at church. I'm in the middle of most of the places where it's difficult for them. I find it a blessing to commit some of that to somebody else. Another one of the ministry, you ought to make the visit and follow up on the church level because I'm working with some of the same things on the school level. Number two, we can drag church issues into the classroom. Our wishes, our ideas, our thoughts, where we're at on things, you can carry those into the classroom. It's interesting to take a neutral position on something that's being worked on at church and talk with students and stay neutral instead of them figuring out where you are and which side you're on. I think that for pastors, we need to learn to divide our lives into boxes, church and school. And there's some things in church that you just need to put the lid on and keep the lid on. We were working on a little problem on a bishop level the other day, and I called someone, a brother from church, and he said, "So how was your day?" You know what? I had a good day, difficult day, but a good day, but I couldn't say peeps about the rest of the subject. You have to keep the lid on some things to keep confidences. Number three, you can fall into the trap of working behind the parents' back, stepping in where parents should be involved. We had a situation one year where a parent was making, the child was having difficulty eating certain foods that the parents sent along with them to school. And I couldn't enjoy eating what that parent chose to send in the lunch. It was strange. I won't go into those details, but I had to help this boy to think through what to do with this, but I had to be honest that I would struggle eating that too. How do you do that? You almost can't do that until you cast reflection on mom. But neither could I tell the boy, "Look, you're just smiling. This should just be fine. Well, don't you have foods that you don't like?" "Yeah, I do." What do you do with that? And number four, we can share our pet issues too much. We can wear out our song. I maybe should ask Denley what my pet issues are. I don't. If you're pastor, teacher, they can hear it from you at church. They can hear it from, and it's just like, "Oh, that's him again. He's stuck back on that same thing. Why don't you get a new song once? We're tired of hearing that." Maybe you had a question. We're out of time. We need to close here. My encouragement to you as multiple role people is keep looking at these things a little the way we did here, thinking about them, rolling around in your head, and asking others who are in those roles, asking other teachers, preachers, principals, "How are you doing?" And keep going to teachers' institutes and wrestling with those questions, and there's help. God bless you.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit the docforlearning.org.